Briggs, number 18.
Yes, we're going to be taking items 18, 19, and 20 together, correct? And seated at the table here are the three staff people who have been working on this. On our right is Kim Sanders, Shanta, and then Shanta Keeling in the middle, and then Chris Rose on our left. Also, the section manager for that includes the total maximum daily load program is Lisa McCann, seated in the front row here. So we have, as you can see on the screen here, TMDL's total maximum daily load considerations for pathogens for the San Lorenzo River watershed, the Soquel Lagoon watershed, and the Aptos Creek watershed. And Kim Sanders is going to lead us off, I believe.
Good morning, yes. Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. As he said, I'm Kim Sanders, and I'm from the Watershed Assessment Unit, and I'll be presenting the three
total... Can you move the mic on over,
yeah,
please?
Speak up a little bit louder, Kim.
I'll be presenting the three total maximum daily loads and implementation plans for three Santa Cruz County watersheds. Although I'm delivering the presentation, as Roger said, all of the projects were worked on by a team, including Shanta Keeling and Chris Rose. The background image here for your reference is the San Lorenzo River Estuary and City of Santa Cruz. We're proposing six amendments contained within the three resolutions in front of you. I think that's fine. Resolution 1 contains three of the amendments. The total maximum daily loads and implementation plans for pathogens in the San Lorenzo River watershed, the removal of the shellfish harvesting beneficial use in the San Lorenzo estuary, and the modification of an existing basin plan waste discharge prohibition. Resolution 2 contains two of the amendments. The total maximum daily loads and implementation plans for pathogens in the Soquel Lagoon watershed, the removal of the shellfish harvesting beneficial use, and Resolution 3, the total maximum daily loads and implementation plans for the Aptos Creek watershed. It is these six amendments that we propose adoption for today. The three subject watersheds are within Santa Cruz County. This is the San Lorenzo River watershed, the Soquel Lagoon watershed, and the Aptos Creek watershed. And to give you a better idea of where these are, here are some of the municipalities: the City of Capitola, the City of Santa Cruz, and the City of Scotts Valley. The remainder of the land is under the jurisdiction of Santa Cruz County, with the exception of a couple state parks. Looking closely at the San Lorenzo River watershed, total maximum daily loads were prepared for the San Lorenzo River, Carbonera Creek, Brantefort Creek, Lompico Creek, and Camp Evers Creek, which is too short to show on this figure. In the Soquel Lagoon watershed, total maximum daily loads were prepared for the Soquel Lagoon and Creek and Noble Gulch. And in the Aptos Creek watershed, total maximum daily loads were prepared for Aptos Creek, Trout Creek Gulch, and Valencia Creek. This slide should help you understand how the amendments relate to each watershed and why we group them all together, why we group these three projects together. The modified prohibition, one of today's proposed basin plan amendments, addresses pathogen sources in all three of the watersheds. The removal of the shellfish harvesting beneficial use is common to two of the watersheds, San Lorenzo River watershed and Soquel Lagoon watershed. And the total maximum daily loads, we prepared those for pathogens, the same pollutant in all three watersheds. I'm going to continue by talking about the total maximum daily loads, and through doing so, I'll provide the context for the other three amendments. We confirmed impairment in the water bodies using data from several sources and that were of several types, including water quality data for pathogen indicators in the form of E. coli and fecal coliform concentrations, discharger data such as video surveillance reports, data analysis reports, and monitoring results, ribotyping, which is a type of genetic fingerprint analysis that helps us determine the type of animal or human source, land use, information collected while conducting field reconnaissance, and correspondence with various agencies such as the cities, the counties, and resource agencies. The background for this slide and the next slide is the Soquel Lagoon, just upstream of the Stockton Bridge. I believe it's the Stockton, just upstream of the Pacific Ocean, taken a few weeks ago. We concluded the sources of fecal matter were similar in all three watersheds, and we identified the following sources in all three of the watersheds: stormwater, pets, the sanitary sewer collection system, private laterals, or spills and leaks from private laterals connected to the municipal systems, natural sources such as wildlife, farm animals and livestock, and homeless persons in encampments. And in the San Lorenzo River watershed, we identified on-site wastewater disposal systems, or septic systems as they're sometimes called. We developed numeric targets that are the same for all three watersheds. The numeric targets are the same as the Basin Plan water quality objectives for fecal coliform that protect the water contact recreation beneficial use. We also established total maximum daily loads. They're the same for all three watersheds and are the same as the numeric targets. With many pollutants, for example, sediment, the TMDLs might be measured in pounds per day, but in the case of the total maximum daily loads, we developed pathogens. Our pathogens are expressed in terms of concentrations. We also determined allocations for the responsible parties for each source. The allocations are the same as the total maximum daily loads and are also the same as the numeric targets. Natural sources and responsible parties were given the same allocations. So to reiterate, the numeric targets that we developed protect the water contact recreation beneficial use. However, they don't protect the shellfish harvesting beneficial use in both the Soquel Lagoon and San Lorenzo River estuary. We recommend removing that shellfish harvesting beneficial use from both of those watersheds, or from both of those water bodies. We've based this recommendation on two use attainability analyses, which are appendices D to your project reports, or to the respective project reports, that is. We concluded that this use is not being attained because the habitat in these water bodies doesn't seem to support a viable shellfish population. We did not observe any harvestable shellfish in the two water bodies, and additionally, we contacted and consulted with many credible individuals from agencies such as the Department of Fish and Game, NOAA Fisheries, UC Santa Cruz, the city of Santa Cruz and the county, and we didn't find anyone who knew of harvestable shellfish in the two water bodies, nor of anyone collecting it. We also found no documentation of the original shellfish designation in either of the two water bodies. We're proposing the removal as two of the Basin Plan amendments today. So, the background for this and the next several slides is the San Lorenzo River estuary. I'm going to continue by talking about the implementation plans for the total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs. We determined implementation actions that will reduce the fecal coliform loading from all of the identified sources based on both existing regulatory mechanisms and a modification of an existing prohibition. This prohibition exists for the San Lorenzo River and Aptos-Soquel subbasins, and it addresses point source pollution. We propose modifying that prohibition by adding the prohibition of discharge of non-point sources, in particular human and domesticated animal waste discharge. We propose this as a basin plan amendment today. The prohibition will strengthen our authority to address pathogen loading from homeless persons, spills or leaks from private laterals, pets, and domesticated animals. The prohibition will also allow us to require implementation from landowners with these sources. We will use existing permits or other regulatory mechanisms to address and require implementation for the remaining sources. Implementation for all the sources is summarized in this table. Sewer leaks and spills will be addressed through the water board permits. For example, we can require prioritizing maintenance in the portions of the systems closest to the water bodies. Storm water will be addressed through water board permits. For example, adding management practices to reduce loading from pets, wildlife, and humans. And on-site systems will be addressed either through the San Lorenzo River Wastewater Management Plan, the City of Scotts Valley Program, which requires failing systems to connect to the municipal system, or if the above programs, those two programs, are not adequately addressing pathogen loading, we will use the modified prohibition to require landowners to submit evidence to show us they are not discharging from their on-site systems. We'll use the modified prohibition to address discharges from homeless persons, spills and leaks from private laterals, pets, and farm animals and livestock. In particular, we're going to use that prohibition to require public and private landowners who have these sources on their land to submit evidence to show that they have addressed discharges from these sources, or submit a plan to show us how and when they will address the discharge. Adopting the prohibition does not solve the homeless problem in general, I'd like to point out, but it aims to reduce pathogen loading from this source.
Before you move off that slide, could you back up to it? Just have a couple of questions for you. With stormwater, have we yet seen Capitola or Santa Cruz or Scotts Valley come before us with their Phase 2 permits?
They're not enrolled yet.
They're not enrolled yet. Are they going to... They're in the process, though.
Yes.
Are they going to come to the board, or is it going to be done administratively?
I'm not sure I can answer. Okay.
Yeah, they are going to be coming before the board, and the schedule is December of this year.
It is, okay.
Well, that's if a hearing is actually requested. Otherwise, we intend to enroll MS4s administratively.
Okay. I would be interested at least to know what kind of language then, at that point in time, it could be done with a status report. Is going to be inserted into these swamps that is going to address this TMDL issue.
Okay.
I'd like to see the linkage between the TMDL and then the swamp to see how that language is going to be worded and how that would be different from what we normally have in our swamps.
Okay. We will address that.
And then the modified prohibition at the bottom, is this to give the water board direct regulatory power over these individual type discharges, or is it through the county?
It's for us to have direct regulatory authority.
How are we going to deal with homeless persons?
That's a good question. We have some ideas, and we have to develop plans to figure that out. Give me a second, and I'm going to think about that.
Mr. Gill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that question. Yeah, we realize that this is a different, well, doesn't want to stand up here, so we realize that this is a unique sort of source for us. Typically, we've dealt with point sources, and we've dealt with sources that discharge to land. But here we're talking, which are inhuman sources, but here we're talking about a human source, people who are homeless. And the reality is that you just can't get these people out of riparian areas because they just go to another riparian area, and the municipalities know that. And so this is a situation and a unique type of discharge and problem that we are now confronting really for the first time. And we don't know exactly how this is going to go, and we're going to be having to work with the municipalities, counties, and cities, and so forth to figure out the best way to approach this problem. How that is going to go, frankly, we don't know at this time, and neither do the cities or the municipalities because they've been dealing with the same situation.
Mm. Okay. That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
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 How about the private laterals? Are you thinking of, I mean, normally municipalities just have something in their ordinance which directly deals with lateral inspections and maintenance.
Right. Yeah.
What's your thought on how you're going to do this?
Yeah. At this point, the municipalities are proactive. They are proactively trying to address this problem, and in our implementation plans essentially say that, and say that we realize that you're being proactive, and we're going to be working with you, and we want reporting and so forth. And they have wastewater management plans to address this source. So our first sort of approach is to let that process continue and monitor that process. And if that process isn't adequate, then we're going to have to do something else on an individual basis. But at this point, we want to let that proactive sort of work continue and monitor and see if that alleviates the problem.
Dr. Press.
On the point about discharge from homeless persons, nowhere in your project report do you list them as the number one in your rank order of importance. So it's a difficult problem, but how much are you talking about? How much percentage of the problem, I mean, you probably can't quantify the percentage, but it's not really, even if you fix the whole, if you had no more homeless people in the riparian areas of the county, is that going to make a big difference towards meeting the towards repairing or removing the impairment to pathogens? I'd be surprised.
Okay, I'll give this a go if that's all right. A couple of things is that you're right; it's very difficult to quantify numerically where the proportion of contribution from each one of these sources, because it's been our experience that proportion changes by season, and not only that, by year and by municipality and watershed. So it's very, very difficult, and there really aren't methods at this point that really give us confidence in putting a number on what that proportion is. However, even if that proportion was small, this is a unique source because it is a human source. And the thought is that because it's a human source, it carries more organisms that are likely to be pathogenic to humans.
Yeah, right.
Therefore, we want to key in on those human sources because they have a higher probability of having pathogens that are pathogenic to humans.
Yeah. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Shallcross.
Could you just explain a little bit more the thing that you said that caught my attention on the on-site systems was that if the two programs, the San Lorenzo River Management, Wastewater Management Plan and the Scotts Valley Program failed, then you go to modified prohibition, in which case one of the things that might happen under that is that the individual homeowners or landowners would have to prove they're not discharging from their on-site system. Do you mean discharging anything or discharging certain constituents? Or
I think that would be any type of discharge that isn't treated to the appropriate level of a septic system that wouldn't be functioning properly.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, is that they're not discharging, because septic systems do discharge by their nature.
Yeah.
So I was a little concerned that we were getting into a total prohibition on discharges, which...
No, we struggled with that language.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, since you brought it up, I was going to wait, but I won't. On the on-site system, so I sent a note. It's in the questions and answers. This is about pathogens from on-site systems in the San Lorenzo Valley watershed. And I know John's here. So the county has been looking at this for a long time. There are 14,000 septic tanks up there. Some percentage of them leak. Perhaps 130 to 650 systems, according to your project report. This is the number I've seen before. In the question and answer, staff has said that the county has focused on problem areas as opposed to simply selecting a sample of on-site systems that are close to riparian areas. And I understand the rationale: poor soil, high groundwater, small lots. Okay. And staff said that the county has inspected 12,000 of the 14,000 septic systems since 1986, finding that focusing more on problem areas has been leading to better water quality. What's the basis for that conclusion? I mean, we are, as far as I can tell from your report, from what I hear in the county, pathogens in the San Lorenzo River have not gotten better, really. That's why we're here. So how successful is this inspection program for the septic tanks up in the San Lorenzo watershed if we're still seeing this? And you're listing it as number one on page 56 of your San Lorenzo River and Lompico Creek, the number one problem. So I'm not seeing where the confidence that this approach to inspection and kind of rehabilitation or maintenance is getting us a solution on this problem. So maybe you could address that.
Okay, it's a multifaceted question, so I'll try and answer all of your questions. Let's see. First, I think you were saying, I'm trying to decide where to start. I'm going to start here with, this is from the wastewater management plan status report that we received towards the end of February. And on the left, thank you.
Yeah, I looked for that and I couldn't find it.
Yeah, so on the x-axis here, this, as you can see, that's the year. And this is the percent of systems failing. So this is 1986 and this is 2007. And if you can see, this is, I think, a great graph showing that over the years, the rate of system failure has been steadily decreasing until now, we're at about 1% to 3% systems failing. So,
and how do we know that?
This is based on inspections that the county has done, as well as pumper inspections as well. Two separate different types of... Oh, I'm sorry. It's right there. Gosh. County inspections and pumper reports.
But when I say how do we know that, county inspections are done randomly? Are they done on a schedule? Are they done... Why would the county inspect a system? I mean, what would be the trigger to do it?
I believe the county is planning on inspecting all the systems over this time period, and what they focus on first is areas with poor soil conditions,
yeah,
high groundwater.
Small lots.
And small lots, exactly. Yeah. So that would be the prioritization system they use.
Okay, so they're just going through it. It's not that somebody has aside from those criteria, nothing else has triggered it. They're just on a schedule. You're in a problem area. You're on a list. Here we come.
That's my assumption. John can correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Okay. Thanks.
As opposed to the county responding to complaints.
Right.
I mean, we're trying to figure out what is their program. Is it an intentional program,
okay,
that's methodically going through?
Okay,
I know,
yes.
He's coming up right now. How are you?
Good morning. John Ricker, Water Resources Division Director with County of Santa Cruz. We have been doing this program since 1986. Many of the areas we've inspected the systems probably two or three times. We essentially give our staff a list of parcels to just go out and essentially go parcel by parcel, particularly within the problem areas, to look for signs of failure. And we try to do that mostly during the winter time when the water tables are high and the soils are saturated. We do also respond to complaints, although the number of complaints has also been declining, similar to the graph that was up there before. We have systems that have given us problems in the past. We have what we call our recheck list, and we go back and check on some of those systems more frequently. We've also looked at lists from the pumpers reports where the septic pumpers may identify a system as failing. We'll go back the following winter to see if that system is still problematic. We really have not seen a higher incidence of failure from that list. We do have some systems that have been repaired or upgraded but don't fully meet the standards. Those we go back and look at on an annual basis to make sure that they're still working properly. So we have a variety of triggers that get us out there, but we do also have the program of just getting out periodically. Originally, we were aiming for on the average once every 6 years. We're actually have reduced that frequency just because, as you saw, the frequency of failures has dropped off significantly. We've got staff out there spending a lot of time not seeing much of anything, so we've been trying to figure out ways to really make that staff time more cost-effective. We also do a lot of sampling at both our routine stations, and then we get out during the winter time when we have, again, high water tables and water flowing in the roadside ditches, to just take random sampling as well as our regular stations. And when we get high bacteria counts, then we then follow up to try to bracket where that's coming from, and then do the inspections in those neighborhoods as well where we're seeing high bacteria counts. So we have a variety of efforts that sort of get us out there and into the areas where we think we may find the most problems.
Do you have a septic tank ordinance?
Well, we do.
And does it allow you to require homeowners to pump and inspect and repair on any frequency?
We do not have a mandatory pumping requirement right now. We're finding that probably, I think it's 80 or 90% of the systems do seem to be getting pumped on a voluntary basis. We have some, though, that have not been pumped, and that's one of the things we've debated. That's one of the steps that we could take, would be a mandatory pumping program, but we haven't done that yet. But if we find gray water bypasses, if we find surfacing failure, then we require them to upgrade to meet our current standards. Also, if there's any kind of building remodel, bedroom addition, they are required to pump their tank and get an inspection to show that the system's working properly. If that inspection shows that it's not proper, or if we have records in our files, then we also require the system to be upgraded as a condition of approval of the building permit.
Does the inspector have to fill out a report and submit it to the county?
Yes. We've required that since 1989, that all septic tank pumping requires that an inspection report be completed and submitted.
Okay. And is there someone on your staff then that goes through that report to make sure that anything that needed to be repaired was in fact repaired properly?
We don't do that for every report. We enter the reports into our database, and they're available if we have an issue with a particular system, or if there's a building permit addition, we can look at the results of pumping. We also do run reports against our database and flag the systems that have been subject to frequent pumping or where the pumper has identified a failing system, and then we'll follow up on those.
And do you have any requirement that an inspector be certified or licensed or registered, or could it be anybody that has a pumping truck?
They do require a permit from us to operate as a septic pumper. We do have an ordinance that specifies what they do during a pumping event, how they do it, the kind of information they need to record. We do have the ability to suspend their permit if they're not working properly. They also discharge to both of our sewage treatment plants. We have the ability to cut off their disposal opportunities at those plants, again, if they're not complying with our requirements.
Okay. Mr. Briggs?
And John, so to clarify the original question about this graph, we've got just over 20 years here, and it sounds like on the average you might have 1,000 inspections a year, roughly. So what we're looking at here with the darker line is the number or the percent of those, say, average 1,000 per year where the county has found a failure. And so if it's down to 1%, that's actually 1% of, say, those 1,000 that you inspected in 2007.
That's correct.
So it is a pretty good indication of a reduction in failure rates.
And those failures do include gray water bypasses, too. It's not just a surface failure.
Okay.
Okay. Any other board questions?
Thank
Dr.
You.
Press? Okay. All right. Thank you.
May I address the second part of Dr.
Of
Press's
course.
Question? You had said before that on-site systems we had named in the San Lorenzo as the number one source. And I just wanted to clarify that, yes, while we named them as the number one source, I wanted to clarify that the level of impairment in the San Lorenzo River itself, not the estuary, I'll call that separate, but the levels in the San Lorenzo River themselves are really not that high. So that's good news. In some cases, they're barely exceeding standards. In fact, a couple of the stations are more or less meeting standards. So I just wanted to point that out.
Now, in the public imagination, the estuary and the river are lumped together because people get sick surfing. And so that kind of implicates the rest of it, but you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, I got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The parties responsible for implementation are the City of Santa Cruz, the City of Scotts Valley, the City of Capitola, the County of Santa Cruz, the Municipal Sanitation Districts, and private and public landowners. Some of those public landowners would be Caltrans and the railroads. Public comments were received from three parties: A1 Septic, a septic maintenance company, the County of Santa Cruz, and Caltrans, and we responded to all of those comments and included that in attachment 7 of your staff reports. I'm going to highlight some of the main concerns here. Caltrans pointed out that they'd like to be able to manage homeless encampments on Caltrans property via their stormwater management plan. And we, excuse me, we agreed that they should be able to do this. I'm going to talk about some comments from the County of Santa Cruz. They made comments particular to each watershed and then some for all watersheds. So for Aptos and Soquel, they pointed out that they questioned the need for a full livestock non-point source approach in the Aptos and Soquel watersheds due to low horse contribution based on ribotyping. We concluded that it's necessary to address livestock as a source in the two watersheds based on our observations of livestock in the watersheds, in addition to aerial photography of livestock facilities and water quality exceedances in these areas. But we reduced the implementation area in the Soquel Lagoon watershed for livestock to the Noble Gulch sub-watershed only. We'd also like to note that our required implementation through that modified prohibition for livestock will be commensurate to the level of severity of that source. So some comments specific to the San Lorenzo watershed. The county pointed out that certain portions of the San Lorenzo River show minimal exceedances, and we agreed. And we stated this in our data analyses, and we will prioritize implementation in the San Lorenzo River based on the severity of those exceedances. They also pointed out that private lateral spills are underreported, and we chose an implementation strategy that will address spills from private laterals. They also pointed out that implementation efforts toward homeless encampments will be difficult, and we agree. That's a challenge. And as Chris said, we will be planning to work with stakeholders in order to develop solutions to this problem. And some comments from the county that were common to all watersheds. I'll touch on those. The county pointed out that their work has already demonstrated that natural sources are the causes of the exceedances, and that they do not believe controlling for the controllable sources will ever result in the attainment of the total maximum daily loads in downstream portions of the water bodies, and that we can never fully mitigate for the effects of urban impacts, especially without an unlimited budget. We concluded that there is uncertainty regarding natural sources and their contribution, and whether controlling controllable sources will result in achieving the total maximum daily loads. However, if all of the required management measures are in place and pathogen indicator concentrations, that is, remain high, we may investigate to determine if that's due to uncontrollable sources. And if so, we'll reevaluate the targets and the allocations and may develop a site-specific objective. And that may include different indicator organisms than what we're using now. Finally, the county reported that there's currently no mechanism to collect costs for stormwater management from property owners. And we acknowledge this in our project reports, and we agree that this may pose a hardship for the county. So we recommend adoption of these six amendments because we conclude that addressing pathogen loading through the TMDLs and the implementation plans is necessary to improve water quality in the three watersheds. Improving water quality will help to protect the health of the people that recreate and the wildlife that live in the subject water bodies. And it'll help to preserve the attractiveness of these areas to tourism, which promotes economic sustainability in the adjacent communities. And we may also bring greater awareness to some of the problems facing these watersheds that are not unique to these watersheds. So we recommend adoption of the six resolutions, or excuse me, the six amendments, and I'm going to put them up here again for your review. And this concludes the presentation. And I want to reiterate that Shanta and Chris and I are available for your questions.
Thank you. So we'll go to speakers.
I have a question.
Okay, Dr. Press.
Because we might not get back to it. This is on the point about natural sources versus, well, natural, I assume, meaning non-human sources, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Wildlife.
Yeah. But your project report implicates human sources pretty seriously. So this, at least just from the data you provided on pages 35, 36, if we were successful at reducing human sources, that would go a long way, unless I'm missing something considerably here. Sometimes a fifth, sometimes more, well, at least a quarter to a fifth to a quarter of the sources would be, I mean, obviously you're not going to get all the human sources down, but that's going to make a big difference. And as Chris pointed out, that's the more dangerous pathogens. So doesn't that suggest that we can't just kind of throw our hands up and say it's natural sources, we can't do anything. We've got this human source. How do you respond to that?
You're saying that, yes, we don't want to just think it's all natural sources and that we should address, shouldn't we still be addressing human sources? And yes, we do agree with that. We hesitate to quantify the amounts coming from each source Like we said before, it's very difficult to do that. And we are addressing human sources in several ways. And I think there's plenty of work that can be done to continue to address those as we've outlined in our implementation plan. And I don't think it's time to throw up our hands. I think we can do that, and that we should be able to reduce pathogen loading from controlling human sources.
I guess we'll hear from the county about their reasoning for suggesting that maybe we're... Well, I won't speak for themselves, but let's make sure we get back to that and hear about their understanding of the ratio between natural and human sources and what can be done further than what's being done already.
I think as far as natural sources go, they are a big part of the exceedance, but there are other sources. Yeah. But I also think that... we're going to be addressing some of those natural sources through the stormwater management plan, and so we will be addressing some of those.
Great, thank you.
Okay, Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. I just want to be sure that I'm clear. The modified prohibition that you're asking, that you're recommending be made, is simply to add non-point source as identified in your reports. Nothing further.
It's to add non-point sources, the prohibition of discharge from particular non-point sources, humans and domesticated animal waste, and then it's a conditional prohibition. So we're adding not only that, the prohibition of that waste, the discharge of that waste, but you can discharge that waste as long as you comply with one of three conditions. I can name those for you if you'd
yes,
like to
please.
Hear them. You either need to show us, if you're the responsible party, that you're not discharging, you show us documentation, or supply us with a non-point source pollution control implementation plan, which will have the five key elements. It needs to have the five key elements of the non-point source policy, and telling us, you know, how and when you're going to control your discharges. And you can also comply by either a WDR. You can use a WDR permit, but it has to be specifically fashioned to address the total max, the three total maximum daily loads that were presented here.
This is directed to the counties, but also at some point there may be individual owners of private laterals that may at some point have to come into compliance with those conditions.
Yes, that's correct.
So, and I understand that's a year out from the Administrative Law Office approving the change to the basin plan, and then there's another, is there a second year in which that determination gets made between the county and regional board as to whether or not they're going to take steps and demonstrate compliance? And then at what point do you determine that you must then go directly to the individual private landowners?
Do you have that? Oh, if you know, go ahead.
Okay. It is 3 years after adoption of OAL that it becomes effective. And then the second part, how are we going to figure out whether the county's program is working sufficiently or the city's, for example? We don't know at this point. That's going to be something that we'll determine in the next three or so years. So it's unknown right now.
Any other board questions? Okay, Mr. Briggs, shall we go to our speakers?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Ricker, have you with a card if you wish to speak to us some more, and then Akin Babatola. Those are the two cards I have for this item, for these three items.
Good morning. Again, I do want to compliment staff on their efforts. They have done, I think, a great job of working through a lot of fairly complex data and work that's been done. They also were very responsive to our comments and really tried to incorporate and respond to a lot of what we said. So your staff, I think, has done an excellent job on this. I do want to sort of reiterate a couple points which they brought up. They do acknowledge that there are uncontrollable sources out there. We have, I think, more confidence in the ribotyping work that was done than maybe the peer reviewer or staff have indicated. At most of our stations, we did over 200 analyses of isolates to determine what the sources were of those particular E. coli bacteria. So we do have a pretty good data set for each of these locations. So we feel pretty confident that it's a good indication of the loading and the extent of sources, and it does show seasonal variation. So we think that data is useful and that we can use it right now. Human sources are roughly, 1 to 9% of the source at these lower ends, at the lagoons, which tend to have the highest levels. Those are also the urbanized areas and also the areas that have the highest amounts of waterfowl. We did some calculations looking at the loading from the different sources, and even if we controlled the controllable sources, probably both Aptos and Soquel Lagoon would continue to exceed the standard for impairment. So we think we should probably right now start to look at how we sort of deal with these uncontrollable sources. It's not a situation that's unique to the Central Coast region or to Santa Cruz County. Hopefully some of the work that's being done down in Southern California right now to look at actual incidence of illness relative to various indicators will help to inform us more. But I think we could start to look to maybe some answers sooner than later. The other issue, we do believe it's important to address the controllable sources. We're not saying, don't bother because they're not contributing to impairment. Both the county and the cities are committed to really doing what needs to be done to address those human sources and controllable sources. And we're already doing a lot of that work. You saw from some of the wastewater management program, the city of Santa Cruz has upgraded their collection system significantly over the last 10-15 years, and we've seen the bacteria levels in the lower river improve as a result. We do have more work to be done. The private laterals are probably an area where we need to do more work than we've done so far, but a lot of it we're already doing, and what we don't want to see is that this TMDL results in sort of an unnecessary regulatory and financial burden on the agencies. We can't just look at the standard at 200 and say, well, you need to do more. We're already doing a lot. And we are willing to work. We definitely want to work with you on doing what needs to be done. And staff has indicated there is flexibility in designing the implementation to really target the, where we think there will be some effectiveness. So we look forward to working with staff to define a good implementation program that will be effective but not create burdens on either the agencies or the property owners that really won't result in significant improvement. Thank you.
Okay. I'd be glad to answer any more questions. Are you going to be here
for the sediment discussion?
I will. Good. Yeah, I'm going to stick around for
good.
That.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Babatola.
Good morning. I'm Ken Babatola, and I'm the lab and environmental compliance manager for the City of Santa Cruz. And my comments are based on an interdepartmental exercise that the city did, and I coordinated, and we worked very closely with the staff of the regional board in submitting our comments. And like John, I want to echo the appreciation of city staff on the cooperation and the outcome of the exercise with the board staff. And I want to emphasize three things that I think were derived from this that are unassailable and perhaps should become a model for other pathogen TMDLs. The critical point, and I'm going to be slow specifically on this because I think it bears focus. The critical point of pathogen TMDLs is on beneficial uses. But the item we use to identify beneficial use impairment are not pathogens themselves. They are indicators. Mm-hmm. To the degree that human sources of the indicators themselves are anywhere significant, more than 10%, then they're worth controlling because the indicators are indicative of the possibility of real impairment in terms of health impacts and therefore economic impact in the community. That's why we support the idea that the controllable sources, the human sources, should get the bulk of the effort. The second portion that I think is worthy of emphasis is the impact of city efforts, municipal efforts in general, but our city in particular, in managing private lateral issues. It may not be quite pivotal to this exercise by this board, but even at the state level, the unevenness of measurements for private lateral management and all that is impacting the collection of data. And the state is now making an effort to standardize those reports, and the city has taken an active role, and there are two managers at the city who play a pivotal role there, both in investing in high-quality database to manage that kind of information. Both of them are present here. So part of the information and reporting is actually work that they have done. It's critical that private laterals be considered as a source of possible impairment of the watershed. And finally, the efforts on homeless encampment. The city of Santa Cruz takes its activities on homeless encampments seriously because it sees it not only in terms of these pathogen issues, but it also has a social dimension that the city commits itself to, and that was part of the comments that we submitted to the Water Board. So, in fact, we're, as a city, we've moved further ahead than perhaps just the pointed control measures that pathogen control would require. We're actually working to rehabilitate these people and perhaps give them temporary containment vessels for their discharges. Thanks.
Thank you. A question for you. I may have missed this point if you had mentioned it to us, but does the city have an ordinance that includes a lateral line inspection requirement for individual homeowners?
The city does not have an ordinance specifically, but the city has several management measures to intervene on private laterals, and that's where both of the two gentlemen behind me exercise the efforts on behalf of the city.
Well,
we do not have an ordinance that says this is how you manage your private laterals.
Does the city feel that it should have one, or does it feel it has sufficient?
I can't speak to that at the moment, but you know, it's something that I think we would consider.
Well, does the city have a requirement that lateral lines be inspected with some frequency?
Steve can probably speak to that.
Okay.
Steve Wolfman, I'm the civil engineer for the wastewater system.
Okay.
We do not at this time have a requirement for inspection of the private lateral. We do, our ordinance does cover maintenance of the private lateral, and we have enforcement ability if the lateral is not properly maintained. And I think during the next year or two, we will, you know, look at the possibility of a required inspection, possibly with the sale of the home. So that's what we're looking at. That's what we'll be looking at in the future.
Does the city inspect its own main trunk lines?
Oh yes.
Do you use smoke?
No, we do not. We do not believe in smoke. We use video inspection of our lines,
okay.
And of course, while we clean all of our lines approximately once a year, we're also that's also serving as inspection of the main lines.
And I guess maybe I should have clarified my question, and that is: does the city use some method of inspection that would give rise to information that there are laterals
well,
may not be functioning?
Yes. When we do our video inspection, we pan up laterals, so we would see if a lateral has root intrusion, but that's pretty much the extent of what we would inspect on the private side of the lateral, other than in the case when there is an actual problem that occurs. Then our crews would go out and possibly inspect the lateral or at least clean the lateral and then serve notice to the homeowner that it must be remedied.
Does the city feel that that laterals may be contributing to some of the pathogen discharge we're seeing?
We believe that it's something that can be improved. That it's a possible source. We don't see it as a major source, but we are looking to improve the private lateral enforcement and inspection over time. We believe that our work on the mains at this point has been more important during the last 10 years. But now that our mains are really in very good condition, we feel that the next step, you know, is to look at the private laterals and try to, you know, up our enforcement on that side.
Okay. Dr. Press?
This is a question for Mr. Babatola, if you... I just wanted to get a sense from you. Mr. Ricker was pointing out that a concern of the county would be that this TMDL would result in more regulation than would be helpful for eight entities that are already quite active and have a good reputation. So I wondered if you might comment on that sentiment. The city of Santa Cruz is also quite active and concerned. So where do you come down on that? And I guess, do you support this TMDL?
Right.
Thank you.
The city absolutely enjoins itself to the totality of the TMDL as proposed by staff. In terms of the sentiment of the city, in terms of cost, we think the approach of the board and its staff has been excellent, in part because they haven't approached the TMDL in the classic numeric load things. What they've done is to maintain that the steady state for maintaining recreational uses and other beneficial uses shall be maintained. In other words, there's really no vehicle to impose some onerous management or engineering force on the participants. The second, an economically prudent thing that arises from this program is that, absent a comprehensive look at the data, at high quality data, the drivers for this TMDL initially were that the watershed was only impaired at the estuary. Now, if you were focused on fixing the problem at the estuary without recognizing the significance of pathogen dynamics upstream, that would impose an undue burden financially on the city, and technically it's unlikely that you would resolve the impairment. So this seems the prudent way to go without imposing any unnecessary economic burdens on anybody.
Well, then similarly, you heard that just our recent discussion about laterals, and you were concerned about the quality of the data of these laterals. Now, I could imagine that improving those data would be tremendously valuable, but also possibly costly. What would be your preferred approach?
I think the city has already recommended an approach which is, I think, also consistent with what I'm hearing from the state board in terms of what private lateral data ought to be. It ought to be data that helps to secure resources on a regional basis to figure out what new technologies need to be put in place. It wouldn't be prudent to ask that cities suddenly take over the management of private laterals, knowing that we have no way of recovering much of the cost and knowing the budgetary constraints of cities. So I think the first and most important step is to have a uniform plan for how you respond to private laterals. And if the information becomes standardized, as I know that the Water Board is trying to do, the State Water Board is trying to do, in terms of the data that goes into its CWICS, that's the Integrated Water Quality Management System, Because that's a first step to doing that. If you get high-quality data, then you're able to marshal resources in a more reasonable way rather than imposing perhaps onerous costs on local municipalities. What tends to happen, and data will bear this out once they standardize things, is that if you can see, if you can predict that the outcome would be an onerous financial constraint on your municipality, you tend not to gather data, and therefore the impairments continue. So the first step will be gathering data on a regular basis without the notion that that's going to impose some management, engineering, or financial
burden. Right, but maybe that those high-quality data would leverage other resources. And moreover, to flip it around, maybe doing some kind of pilot data collection to sort of as a proof of demonstration, a proof of concept would be a potentially a good way to go also.
I agree.
Yeah, thank you.
Before you step away, let me just suggest this so that it's in your mind when the discussion comes up again within the city, that the city of Santa Barbara considered an ordinance whereby the cost for lateral line inspections was shifted onto homeowners for when properties were sold. Just like they had to get a termite inspection, they had to get a lateral line inspection, and that was filed with the city. And there could also be a requirement that in the absence of a sale within a period of time, that people are required to do an inspection within a 5 or 10 year period.
Thanks. And I'm sure people responsible for drafting those kinds of ordinances would approach the city of Santa Barbara for learning the process of doing that. But I think that's very useful.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Good. Okay.
Chair, one more question
sure.
for this gentleman. I don't know if you know the answer, but on private laterals, how far are they, the home or the property owner, I shouldn't say homeowners because it would be commercial property as well, property owners responsible for the laterals? Are they all the way to the main
to the edge of their property they're responsible?
Then what happens from the all the way to the main? Because there are some cities that have it just to the property line, and then there are other cities, like this city has it to the main.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Briggs.
Yes, another, well, actually one tangent that's just a little bit off topic, but yesterday we had this discussion about that included the city of Santa Cruz's discharge and all the ones to Monterey Bay and Carmel Bay, and that included the endocrine disruptors and pharmaceuticals and whatnot. And I mentioned that we were gathering information on programs, and I wanted to thank Akeen for this morning responding to that and bringing in several different materials here from the city that the city has been already has in place and is working on that topic for us to use. So little aside, but I want to thank you in front of the board. And then back on topic again, Akeen, you mentioned the homeless situation, and I certainly agree it's a societal issue. And we talked yesterday about some problems that might be bigger than we are, and this might fall into that category. It does have the water quality side effect that we're talking about here. And, you know, there are lots of other areas of society to blame: healthcare, mental health care, the economic situation, et cetera. They're a little beyond our scope. But and these folks have to, they've got to live somewhere, but the problem in terms of water quality is exacerbated by the tendency to live adjacent to creeks. And so I'm wondering, and maybe this is addressing your comments that you submitted in writing, I don't recall, but I'm wondering, and this is a question for John as well, representing the county, but I'm wondering if locally you, in addition to this idea that you mentioned about the vessels that might be used as sort of a temporary measure or assistance, you know, recognizing that while homeless people aren't allowed to really camp anywhere legally, but there is sort of selective enforcement of that. In other words, you don't find typically homeless people camping in a schoolyard. You know, they're not camping in the foyer of the police department, and that's because there's selective enforcement. So I'm wondering if it's a matter of priorities, and if the fact that the water quality issue is, if it's recognized as a high priority. Dr. Press mentioned the connection with potential illness from surfers, for example. I'm wondering if that's a way of maybe using this selective enforcement so that we don't have a really bad situation of people who are camped right on rivers and discharging directly to our creeks. And has that come up locally? Could you go to the microphone, please?
The city's initial comment before the preparation of the final staff reports to the board included a number of measures that the city had taken specifically in regards to managing homeless encampments along the San Lorenzo River. Yes, so, yes, the city has done some kind of enforcement far beyond, I think, what most cities do, and that included budgeting for a park ranger, or I don't remember what the official title is, but it's documented in the report we submitted to to this exercise.
Okay.
To be able to manage and control encampments along San Lorenzo River.
Yeah, because it's a problem in virtually, if not all, of our cities.
Okay, we have one more speaker, Mr. Collins, Kevin Collins.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Kevin Collins. I live in one of the listed watersheds for this TMDL. I wasn't really planning to comment on this item until I heard the staff report and discussion. I just have a couple anecdotal experiences that I'd like the board to hear. I think the most – I haven't discussed this with John. We know each other. I probably should have at some point in the past. Recently, someone was repairing or replacing a septic system in the route that I take to send to town, and they were dumping the soil into the stream directly. That's how I became aware of the fact that the septic system was being built or repaired. I saw this plume of soil in the stream, so I tracked it back to its source, discovered the guy with the excavator was just dumping the soil into the creek. I filed both a written and a phone complaint with the Department of Environmental Health, and no one called me, and I saw no evidence that anyone visited the site where the septic system was being built, and in other words, there didn't appear to be a response. I've lived in the same location for about 20 years, upstream of a public water agency intake. I've seen two catastrophic and probably three or four chronic septic system failures over the years out of about 20 houses. I don't know how to evaluate the county statistics as far as inspections and so on, but my observations in the small area I'm aware of aren't consistent with that. I also am aware of a house with an outhouse. It doesn't even have a septic system. It's also upstream of this public water agency intake. Both the manager of that agency had complained and several neighbors. That house continues, as far as I understand, to have a outhouse along a riparian a perennial wet stream that flows to the public agency intake. Hopefully my personal observations aren't characteristic of the greater San Lorenzo Valley, but what I know about the small rural roads and so on, I have reason to believe they probably are in many cases similar. I'm pleased that the regional board is supervising the cities and county in this case. I think it's really necessary. Otherwise, there's no one else watching but people like me who care about water quality, or the agency people like John, who I'm sure also care about water quality. Thank you.
Mr. Collins, when you mentioned that there was, you observed catastrophic failures Do you mean septic system failures?
Yes. One was so bad that this is a house that was, it's only a few feet above the base flow elevation of the stream. The site was flooded with septic discharge. The ground could no longer absorb it. At that point, the septic pumping company filed a report to the county, and the people that live there aren't really capable of handling this kind of a situation. They don't seem to be able to deal with it. And an engineered system was installed, a very complex engineered system. Whether or not it's properly maintained, I have no idea. In the other case, a neighbor apparently cut off his sewer line to the septic system and discharged it directly into Lompico Creek. None of my neighbors were aware of this until those people finally left the neighborhood and someone else bought the house, discovered the problem when she was having the home inspected. And the plumber who had come pointed out to her that the sewer discharge from her house was going directly untreated, as though we were living in a third world, into the public water supply above the surface diversion. Now, that isn't anything that would have been directly the responsibility of, say, the County of Santa Cruz, because no one was even aware of it. We didn't know that this was the case. I certainly would have reported this situation if I was personally aware of it. It wasn't because there was an ephemeral stream adjacent to this building. It was impossible to see this discharge. But we were all just kind of just revolted when we found out about it. And, of course, the lady who had just bought a house immediately repaired the problem. But anyway, that's just sort of an example of how bad it can get in terms of fecal discharges into San Lorenzo and other streams. So I think it really is important that the regional board continues to be fundamentally involved in this process, and I appreciate your taking an interest in it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any board questions? Comments?
Huh? I just want to commend the staff for their work.
Ready
on
to
this.
Go, huh, Mr. Hodgson. Yeah. Well, hold on one second.
I just want to commend the staff for their work. I mean, this represents tremendous data synthesis, collection, collaboration on a problem that is really complex. So I learned a lot reading this, and I think the public has been served tremendously. And I want to echo Mr. Collins' comment that it's really quite a good partnership going forward. So thank you very much for that.
Mr. Briggs, any final staff comments?
Lisa, did you distribute? Okay, thank you very much. Any follow-up responses from staff?
We want to thank all the speakers, and it sounds like the speakers are in agreement with what we are proposing that the board approve, and we'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Was there anything brought up in the comments that's new that you didn't already respond to that's significant? Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Hodgson.
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Yes.
I just